Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, back from a summer hiatus, a couple weeks of vacation, a couple weeks of just not showing up. But we're back, and my guest today is Andrew Hall. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, Robert.
Thanks for coming back on the show.
My pleasure.
Andrew was here at the beginning of July talking about the new diagnostics hub, diagnostics and performance hub in Visual Studio.
That's correct.
And that was a great show, so if you didn't see that, you should go back and watch that. And actually, in the episode prior to that, which was when we introduced the Visual Studio 2013 preview, I did a very brief, high-level overview of managed memory analysis that you helped me with the demo for. Thank you for that. And you're back to go into detail on that, because my high-level 5 minutes or even less on that is just not good enough.
Yeah, we've also added some cool stuff since then as
well.
There
you go. So folks want to know the details of that. So managed memory analysis in .NET, which is a feature of Ultimate, Visual Studio Ultimate 2013, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and then it works on all operating systems?
It works on all operating systems. The restriction is, at the moment, it requires the process that you're running had been running at least .NET 4.5.
Okay, but it's not a Windows 8 feature.
That's correct. It's
awesome.
Tied to the version of .NET.
Okay.
All right, let's take a look at it. So I have Visual Studio 2013 Ultimate right here. I'm just going to go ahead and open my sample project. And so my scenario is that I have this application that's up running in production, and my operations team has been seeing a problem with memory issues. The app pool's recycling frequently, it doesn't stay up very long, and the memory usage keeps going up.
Okay.
So they've collected a couple dumps that were taken at different points in time. And so I'm going to go ahead and open the second dump that I got back from them. So I'm going to say File, Open File. And I'm going to go ahead to where I saved those. And I'm going to open the second one, which is the newer of the two, the one that's the bigger. You can see it's about 1.2 gigabytes, and my first one's about a gigabyte. So once this goes ahead and opens up, I'm going to see that I have this debug managed memory option here. If the process wasn't running on at least .NET 4.5, this would be disabled, and it would tell me that the process didn't support it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and click that, and it's going to launch the new .NET memory analysis feature. This is going to take just a little bit of time. We are processing 1.2 gigabytes worth of data, so I think given that, we do a pretty good job with performance. So it's going through, finding the objects, finding the references, finding the roots, what's keeping things alive in memory. And so it's going to bring up this view. And one of the things you'll notice that's different about from when we released this at preview is that I have this inclusive size bytes column right here. And so what this is doing is we're doing a calculation on how much various objects are holding alive in memory. So now it's not just how big are you, but it's how much memory are you responsible for keeping alive. We'll look at that a little bit more in a moment. A couple of the other things that we've added is you'll notice this little info icon right up here that says view settings have filtered some object types. Just my code collapsed small objects. You notice I only have three things appearing right now in my object type table. This was not in preview, and a lot of the diagnostics tools, the debugger other places, and the profiler in some places, we have this concept of just my code where we try to help filter out data that we think is likely not that interesting to you, so we can help you focus on the stuff that you care about. So I can control this here in view settings. So if I were to turn off just my code, for example, you'll see that a lot more stuff comes back in. And so it's a lot more things I have to focus on, and as you look at this, you see a lot of things that may not be quite as interesting to me as a user, right? There's a bunch of cache-related things, there's some Visual Studio Web Page Inspector runtime.
Yeah, there's some stuff that you have no control over.
Yeah, there's a bunch of byte arrays, which may or may not be interesting, but there's 1,240 of those, so how do I think about reasoning about that data? So what just my code does is it takes all of these objects that we think are probably not interesting to you, or maybe they're just too common, like byte array and string, and we assign the cost up to the parent. So the cost is accounted for in this inclusive size, and we say, well, if you're being held onto, we're just gonna make you disappear from the list, and we're gonna add you into your parent size. So for example here, let's look at this in a second. Notice the size of user, which is one of the objects that appeared before. It's telling me that the total size of the 872 are about 2.5 megabytes. Once I turn just my code back on, you're going to see that the size of user actually jumps up to 559 megabytes.
Okay.
So I can see that user is holding on to a lot of data, but it's a lot of those types that may or may not have been may or may not have been easy to identify that
right.
in the table all up. The second setting, which is one that's likely less interesting, but is this collapse small object setting. And so what this is going to do is as we scroll down, you'll see that there's a lot of objects down here that there's one of them that's 72 bytes, and it's holding 624 bytes alive. So collapse small objects, the idea is to help to reduce the noise. Anything that's inclusive size is less than 0.5% of your total heap size is probably not interesting from a memory perspective because it's statistically irrelevant.
Is that configurable?
This is not configurable
okay.
at this point
so
in
a
RTN.
Hard setting.
That's correct. We tried to pick some defaults. We'd love to get feedback from people if they need to be able to configure that, if they don't like the defaults that we picked for them.
Be interesting to see what people would want. If it was configurable, when would they configure it and what would they configure it to? So you might, instead of making it entirely configurable, you might just have five or six of the most popular settings or something.
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting.
So yeah, this is our obviously a V1 feature that mm-hmm. in RTM, and so we love to get feedback from people and hear what they need to help this make more useful to them. So next thing I'm gonna do is, you know, so I know I have a memory problem. I can see that there's a bunch of memory being dedicated to users, and my operations team tells me that the longer the application runs, right, memory keeps increasing, recycles, same thing, pattern happens over and over again. So I'm pretty sure that there's a memory leak going on. But the best way to tell that is to actually compare it to a baseline. Can
right.
I compare it to the dump that was collected previously to see what's increased over time? So I'm going to go ahead and browse, and I'm going to choose the first dump that they've given me that's about 250 megabytes smaller. And so it's going to go ahead and crunch some numbers for me, process that dump file, and then it's going to create a diff view. So where I have three columns here, I'm going to now have six columns that are going to go ahead and show me the diff for each of those various ones. So let me go ahead and expand this to be full screen. And so I can see here that, I'll shrink this a little bit, I have count and I have a count diff. I have size, size diff, inclusive size diff. And I can see that my users increased by 345. That seems pretty suspicious to me. The website isn't getting that much traffic. So I wouldn't expect in the short period of time that these two dumps were collected to have an increase in 345 user objects in memory.
Okay.
So if I click on my user, it's going to open a second view down here. And one of the things it's going to show me is paths to root. This is what's keeping the object alive in memory. So since .NET's a garbage collected runtime, if you lose all of your references to an object, it will be cleaned up and garbage collected. So the fact that something's alive in memory means that there's a reference to it.
Right.
And so in this case, and then the other view that we have, which I'll talk about in just a minute, is references. You can see the types that an object is actually referencing. So going the reverse direction, this has an inclusive size of 213 megabytes total. It's increased 213 megabytes, it's 559 megabytes total. What is rolling up into that cost? But we'll talk about that in a minute. So here, I can see that the sample leak models.user is being referenced by a dictionary. And the dictionary is actually a static variable, and its name is m_usercache in user repository. So if I were to go to my user repository file, I can look, and sure enough, this is what's holding it alive. And so I can figure out where I'm interacting with it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm calling this get user. I can see that I'm creating a new user, adding it to my cache, and I'm returning the user. That, okay. So question is if I'm doing something one level back, so where I call this, I can see in my source code that there was some to-dos when I was creating this application, and I forgot to to do my to-dos. So I'm checking to see if I have a known user, and if I do have a known user, I should be retrieving the user from the database, and that's why I'm sticking them in the local cache just to kind of save that round trip. But I miss doing that, even though I've since implemented that. So let's go ahead and fix this issue. Oh, I have to stop debugging first. Let's go ahead and get out of full screen mode. We'll fix this issue quickly. And I want to say user and let's go ahead and, as my to-do comment tells me to do, add an else here. And so now my hope is that I'm checking to see if this is a known user. If they are, let's go ahead and get them out of the cache or out of the database instead of creating a new user. And then only in the case that we don't, like there's no cookie that tells us we know who this user is, let's go ahead and create a new user handle for them. So to go ahead and validate this, I'm going to go ahead and rebuild this. It's going to redeploy my website, and I have a load test set up that I'm just going to simulate running 100 users against the website for 5 seconds, but that should let me know if I'm going to leak or not. I should expect only 100 users in memory as opposed to however many were in there before. So let's go ahead and click that off. It's going to bring that up and run that quickly. Okay, my load test has finished running, and I'm going to collect a dump file using procdump that's going to represent my load test. So it's going to go ahead and write that out. And so now I'm going to go ahead and open that up in Visual Studio, just like I would did my previous dump. Debug that.
And then you're going to compare it to, you can compare it to that second one, you can compare it to the first one. Can you compare it to more than one at a time?
So I probably don't want to actually do an actual comparison to my previous one. If I do that, we can actually show what'll happen. Because it was collected against a different instance of the process, it's not necessarily meaningful to try to compare it to one that was collected against a different instance. So it's going to warn me. It says the baseline represents a different instance of w3wp.exe than the current view. Comparisons may not be valid. So we don't want to continue. But what I wanted to see was I had, under my load test, I had 100 users hitting it multiple times over the course of 10 seconds. And sure enough, as I expect, I have 100 users objects in here. So I validated that I fixed that leak when the same user came back to the page. I was creating a new instance every time for that user.
Cool.
What does concern me here, though, is that I'm actually seeing that I have about 64 megabytes worth of data for 100 users. And if I wasn't doing anything but kind of loading up the home page, and so it brings up some, you know, hello, welcome to this page type thing, figures out if it knows the user based on a cookie. There's no real reason that I should be dedicating 64 megabytes worth of memory to that. So let's go ahead and use the references view that I mentioned a minute ago to look and see what my user objects are referencing. And you can see here that I'm referencing a byte array and a string. And I'm going to point out, you see this little info icon right here that tells me view settings are not applied in the referenced objects view. Okay. And this means that when we're collapsing the small objects or applying just my code, we think in this view it doesn't make sense to apply. Right? So we apply it up in the summary table to help filter with the noise, and we looked at that earlier. So what does it mean to have 1,000 strings or 1,200 byte arrays and trying to figure out where those go? But now, once I've whittled my view of the world down to, oh, I want to figure out why a user is so big, we'd be lying to you if we hid the fact that you're so big, because almost all of this memory is being occupied in these byte arrays that are being held alive by my user.
Okay.
So now I can figure out in my user model, where are the byte arrays in my objects? And it turns out that if I go do a little work, I won't make you suffer through watching me do that, but that I am doing a select star.
Can you give me the high-level overview of the work you had to do?
Sure, absolutely. So What I did is I go look at my user over here.
Because it kind of begs the question, you've seen what the problem is, but then how do you go find the code that's causing it?
Got it. So I'm going to go look at my user object. In this case, it's in the identity models file. And when I look at the various properties, the only property on my user that's backed by a database is this byte array that's binary data. Mm-hmm. And so, well, where am I creating my user model? It's back here in, my user object. It's in this user repository where I'm running my query from the database. I'm saying select or create user, and I'm selecting star from users where ID equals P0. And so apparently in the database for this user, there's some binary data. There's a field that there's other places in the application that I might want to use. Maybe it's an image or something like that that's been archived into the database. But when the user first visits my website and kind of gets the hello, welcome to the page, I don't actually need that data. So there's no sense in pulling that into memory and then holding that in the memory cache. I should just get that if I actually need it. So the way to fix that
is, given how large it is, you might want to get each one individually on demand rather than load them all up ahead of time.
Exactly. And so instead of doing this classic mistake of select star from my database, let's just get the stuff that I need. And in this case, it's ID and username from users where ID equals that. And let's go ahead and fix it up here as well, because I made the mistake of having two different queries. And so now if we go ahead and redeploy our application, let's go ahead and make sure that our process gets recycled. We can run our load test again. File open.
Yeah, did that overwrite the old one?
No, it actually created a new one. I'll show you a second. So it's Proctum Smart, and it created this one. I can actually see that my user disappeared out of here.
Disappeared entirely because you are collapsing.
Well, and that means it's small now.
Right.
So let's go ahead and get rid of the collapse small objects. And now I can search for user. And sure enough, I can see that my 100 instances are now only 289 kilobytes as opposed to 63 megabytes in my application.
Very cool. That's hugely useful. Two questions, sort of best practices. Any best practices for going from the dump to the code that's causing it, other than total familiarity with the code? Are there any shortcuts you can take advantage of?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that you can do. First of all, if we go back to this one, so let me go switch back to this one to help answer that question, if that's okay. But in the case of static variables, which we know from talking to people that have memory problems a lot, frequently it's the result of statics, because the way statics work in memory, if you're referenced by a static, you're just always alive. Statics directly rooted in the .NET garbage collector framework. And so anything that's referenced by static is always going to be leaked. And so we show you the name of the variable, any static variable that's in your reference graph.
Okay.
Which I had in this particular case. So in case of users, so when I hovered, it tells me that it's in this type user repository,
So sample leak dot data dot user repository. You go looking, and then you investigate from there.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Because we give you the full type names in every case except system, so that may be worth mentioning. Notice that array list shows as array list, hash table shows as hash table, etc. Anywhere that it's just a system dot, we went ahead and removed that because we felt like it just added extra noise, and that's relatively generally dealing with well-known types that are in the system namespace. But anywhere else, so in the case of user, when we were thinking about what is my user referencing, I have the full type name, yep. So in terms of my source code, it helps me get back to my source code. And because I know the types of objects that I'm referencing, for example, I can go look for properties or member variables in those objects in my source code that correspond with the type and then of what I'm seeing in either my reference graph or my referenced objects.
So second question, and while I was thinking about it, I thought of a third question. Second question is best practices on managing all the dump files. So how do you keep track of what of the state of the system every time you take a dump? Can it be tied to check-ins? Can these be associated with check-ins in the code? Because you're going to want to know, okay, we did a dump and users are gigantic. What happened? And you would know that, you know, the state of, can you then go and tie that to check-ins or the history of the code so that you can tell from source control what happened? And can you tie check-ins to dumps, I guess, is kind of the question.
Kind of, is the short answer. So because in the case of the memory tool, we require a full dump, it has the full heap, we have all the information about the various modules and stuff, you can debug it like you can debug crash dumps. It's just a crash dump with the full heap attached. And so first thing you can do is you can look at the modules view. And so any of your modules, so in this case, we have an app named sample leak. Let's scroll down here. And so I know the module version that's associated with that. So assuming I have my build server set up in such a way that it automatically increments my version numbers.
So that would
in
be a good
modules.
Reason to turn that on, because that's not on by default, correct?
It is on by default in the TFS build server.
Okay.
That's correct. And so that's sort of one very easy way to figure out which check-in build it corresponded to is looking at the module version, because we have that information in the dump summary page. Because you can debug it like you normally debugging, you also have that information available in the modules window. If you were to just, you know, do a regular debug with managed or debug with mixed, you'll see all that information in the modules window, just like you're debugging as well.
Okay. And then a third question, and Larry Guger was on a while ago showing us IntelliTrace in production, so you don't actually have to have an instance of Visual Studio Ultimate running on the machine where this is running. You can capture the IntelliTrace information and then look at it back in the dev shop. Can you do the same thing here?
Absolutely.
Sweet.
So you can collect a dump on any machine that's running your thing up in production.
Cool.
And then you bring it back to the Visual Studio machine. And to debug the managed memory portion of this only, we don't even need symbols.
Cool.
So we don't even need the PDB files to view the managed memory information.
Okay. I mean, obviously, presumably, the app should run the same on your machine as on the production machine. But we all know that that's fine in theory, but doesn't always happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in a case of memory where sometimes you can get some weird behavior based on scenarios that just result because of load or conditions that occur with real users hitting it that you never thought to write a test case for.
Cool.
So.
All right. More? Or is that it?
I think that's it.
Excellent. This is a very cool feature. And I can see, you know, we've seen here that it can really help you kind of dive in on what's happening, particularly in the memory. And you know, that example of zeroing down on the byte is causing the problem. And then in that sample, it's fairly straightforward to go back and find the code. Sometimes it might be, you know, hours of detective work, but sometimes you might just hit on it.
That's right. But
it's very cool.
We get you to the first part, that understanding what's increasing in size, how big is it, who's holding a reference to it.
Cool. So excellent feature. Highly recommend you guys try it out. And as you mentioned, it's a V1, so let us know what you like. Let us know what you'd like to see. And thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. That's all for today. And we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.